They have your attention, please. Welcome everyone to the Maryland Libertarian Party Convention. My name is Bob Johnson. I'm the chairman of the party. We've been here for 25 years now. It's lining outside, but a lovely day to be inside.
Hallelujah.
We have a top 5-6 program and great that holy speakers
speak up.
That come out and join us and give us their time. Pat Hussey, who is a member of the Baltimore County Campaign for Liberty, has books on sale in the back. Pat could have joined us today because it's his wife's birthday, but Alex Schlegel, also of the Campaign for Liberty, and my fellow Dundalkian, is manning the table. All the proceeds will be going to the party. It was very generous of Pat to do this. Again, my name is Bob Johnson. If you have any questions, you know, please let me know, and I'll do my best to accommodate you. Does anybody have any questions before we begin? I would also like to point out the special person pushing off special manager, but a very special guest we have here, the LNC treasurer, former national chair, ballot access god extraordinaire, Bill Redpath. We've had for the last 5 or 6 years and the ability to run candidates without Bill, and I'm very grateful for all the effort he's done. Okay, without further ado, our first guest is Paul Dembowski. Paul is the legislative director of Maryland Shall Issue the Citizens Defense League. In his capacity, he is the principal spokesperson, advocate, and point of contact with more than 5,800 members of MSI. Maryland Shall Issue is the largest secondary ideological and educational organization in the state. And he is here to tell us today about the state of self-defense and guns in the state of Maryland. Please welcome Paul.
Thank you, everyone. As Bob was saying, that I'm past president, which always means it's a good day. It's sort of like selling a boat. You know, they tell you about the second best day of your life is when you buy a boat. The best day of your life is when you sell the boat. And I've been president of the organization for the last 4 years and passed off some of the business responsibilities this year to our current president, Patrick Shomo, which is going to allow me to have some more time to deal with just the legislative and the educational arm of things. A little bit about me, just so you kind of know what my perspective of from where I'm coming from. I'm not a politician. I'm not a lobbyist. In fact, I'm a high school music teacher. And until the age of 35, I'd never owned a firearm, never really considered owning a firearm. And I'll apologize. I know that Bob's heard the story before, and I'll apologize if some of you have heard this before. My wife and I lived in Annapolis. We still live in the outskirts of Annapolis, but we were living near the Naval Academy. And where we lived was, you know, where you come across the Naval Academy Bridge and where the Naval Academy Pool is. We lived in that community right there. At the back of that community is the old B&A railroad line. And literally across the other side of the railroad tracks is West Annapolis, which is a fairly chic, Gucci kind of neighborhood. Big-time houses, wealthy people. It's a nice neighborhood. Well, one night, our neighbors, two doors back behind us and this on the other side of the railroad tracks, the wife and the two daughters were at home, and a person escaped from the Jennifer Road Detention Center in Annapolis, and within 2 hours had found himself on the other side of town. Now, if you know where Jennifer Road is, that's Annapolis Mall.
Yeah.
And now we're talking over by the Naval Academy. Within 2 hours, he had found a firearm and had come to these people's house. Broke his way into the door. This is in a good neighborhood. Came in and started shooting right away. The mother and the daughters retreated upstairs to a bedroom, barricaded the door, and this person continued to just shoot through the door over and over and over and through the wall over and over and over. And we know that residential construction is not going to stop a bullet. Well, he kept firing, and they figured out that they were going to have to move the barricade and storm him outside in the hallway before one of them got shot. Turns out that one of the daughters did get shot. She survived. And I decided that day that I wasn't going to ever put myself or my family in that situation ever again. And went out and kind of started this education process, and as they would say, look at me now. So what my goal today is I want to tell you a little bit about what MSI does and what we're about. And also to kind of give you, for those of you that maybe are not too aware of the state of affairs in Maryland, kind of just a broad picture, please. As I said, I'm a teacher by training. We've been told that we like to talk a lot. My students probably think I probably talk too much. If there's anything at any time, just feel free to stop me. I don't have an agenda here for what I have to get done, and I'm here for you. So if there's anything that I can answer questions on, please just feel free to ask. So I want to center around three things today. Just kind of the organization, what we do, and where things stand here in Maryland. So a little bit about MSI. We were founded in 2004. We're an all grassroots effort. No one in the organization, by statute, is allowed to take any kind of money back out of the organization other than expenses. So we're all just citizens like you, and not one of us gets paid for the effort. The bottom line is that MSI was born out of this dissatisfaction with the status quo. And by that, let's face it, I mean the NRA. Everyone looks to the NRA as they're going to come in on your great white horse. And I got news for you, folks. The NRA has abandoned Maryland. Someone maybe more cynical than I would say that they use Maryland as a wedge issue to fund their efforts in other states. I'll let you draw your own conclusions. I will tell you that our NRA rep for the state is a pretty good guy, but he works through falsehoods. And I will tell you that for all intents and purposes, Maryland has been abandoned by the large national organizations. And so there were people standing around sometime back in 2002, 2003, and they were looking at things. If any of you remember Dr. Phil Lee, Mark Wilson, if you guys know anybody around the gun community had been around for a while, those were the folks that kind of precursor of MSI back during the days of the Maryland Citizens Defense League. And those guys were out there banging on doors. They're the ones that take credit for getting rid of Cass Taylor. Now, whether they really did, I don't know. They said it. Okay, I was still living in Virginia back in that time. And so we are a registered nonprofit. We're not just a website. We're not just a bunch of guys that get around and stamp our feet. I won't bore you with the mission statement, but I want to emphasize the part that we're nonpartisan. I don't care if you're Republican, Libertarian, Communist, Democrat. If you believe in the right to self-defense and you believe in the Second Amendment, I'll work with you. And let's face it, in the state of Maryland, we need to be able to work with those other folks because we're operating in a distinct minority. But the reality is, folks, is that we know that anywhere that shall issue laws have been passed and where the right to carry a firearm has been liberalized, we might be able to argue that maybe crime hasn't gone down, but the fact cannot be disputed that it hasn't gone up. Because that's what we always hear. There'll be blood in the streets. There'll be shootouts. It'll be like the Old West. The Old West wasn't even the Old West, truthfully. Right? But the facts remain that it's undisputed that crime has never gone up, and in fact, we could probably point at some causations and correlations and say that it has gone down. And so we can have that discussion about John Lott and Mr. Mustard and Kellerman and all that, and that's probably a discussion for another day. I'm not going to bore you with this. This is just boring. But the point I will point out is there is a real structure to this organization, and I'm just one little cog over here. I might be the one that's most visible, literally and metaphorically, but there is this whole other body of folks that are out there working behind the scenes to make sure that we're giving our folks a good organization to push this issue forward. We have an elected board of directors. I'm on the board of directors. We have our officers, just like any nonprofit, who are going to be responsible for managing the day-to-day affairs. And then, of course, your committee chairs on our outreach and fundraising website. For those of you that might be interested in membership, $10 a year. $10 a year to become a member. And really, that's an associate membership. We probably ought to change that to calling an associate membership. That is, hey, we support what you're doing. We love what you're doing. I'll read your emails and all that stuff. But I really can't take the time to be that involved otherwise. Executive membership is really a full membership. With that comes voting rights and a chance to be an officer. Those are the folks that really want to be active on out there leading the fight, the tip of the spear, if you will. And right now we have about 70 executive members that are working for you in the organization. And our activities are really centered around these three areas. Legislative, which is my primary responsibility. Outreach, which is the educational arm. Technically, we're an educational organization. without where our nonprofit status is. We were allowed to do issue advocacy and lobbying and so forth, but our primary responsibility is as an educational organization. And then this judicial thing, which is kind of a new area to explore. So let's look at this legislative thing, because right now, in case you don't know, and I'm sure most of you do because you're politically pretty aware if you're here, we're right in the middle of the 90-day session in the General Assembly. And it's a terrible time of the year if you're a gun owner in the state of Maryland, because you just really never know exactly what they're going to be up to and what they're going to throw at you. Right now, we're tracking 34 bills this year. There have been years where we've had to, prior to my involvement, if you talk to John Johnson and Associated Gun Clubs, back in the bad old days, they would have 70 to 75 bills, each that they had to work on. About 5 hours in each bill, minimum, that adds up. So we feel pretty fortunate that we're only really working on 34 bills this year. The thing that I think we're biggest proud of, and I know it's hard to prove a negative, is that since 2004, since MSI's inception, there haven't been any major anti-gun initiatives passed in the state of Maryland. Now, think about that, folks. Out of the 50 states, we're probably one of the top four or five anti-gun states in the country, New Jersey, New York, California. Massachusetts is even better than Maryland in some ways. New Jersey, Connecticut's better than Maryland in a lot of ways, but worse in others. So we're right there on the front lines of this. And any of you that have been involved with this issue prior to this, back during the Glenn Denning administration, oh my goodness, huge bills being passed. And so we're pretty proud of this. Now, of course, as a gun owner in Maryland, most things that we do are going to be reactive. We don't have the numbers. Until we start having more pro-gun legislators in the General Assembly, or we can start winning more hearts and minds, which is starting to happen, we are going to be fighting a defensive battle. Probably 80% of the bills that we work on each year are defensive. And by that I mean fighting off more anti-gun initiatives. But the truth is that we're starting to see this ship turn. Here's some things that we've kind of fought off here with. Assault weapons ban, that was a good one, wasn't it? You know, the 10-year ban sunsetted in 2004. So right away, Neil Quinter and Rob Garagiola, Howard County, Montgomery County. Neil Quinter worked for Dianne Feinstein. You know, the shoulder thing that goes up, barrel shroud. Somebody asked him what a barrel shroud was, because that was one of the characteristics of an assault weapon. And so they said, well, Senator Feinstein, what's a barrel shroud? What's that shoulder thing that flips up? She didn't even know what it was. She was for it, but she didn't know what was in it. We have to vote for the bill to find out what's in it, right?
Yeah.
When they figured out that they couldn't get the gun ban, they came for the ammunition. Chris Rock figured that out. Remember Chris Rock said something like, man, we don't need to ban the guns. Just get the ammo. And that's what they started to do. Encoded ammunition and ammunition tax. So let's add another tax on top of it. But we're going to find a guy that says he's got this voodoo science that'll work, and we'll pass the bill to require it, even though we know it doesn't work. So this bill would have required, hang with me here, we're not talking about ballistic fingerprinting, we're not talking about CSI type stuff. We're talking about each bullet, each projectile being serialized with an individual number, registered to a box by the manufacturer. That box and all of its bullets being serialized and registered to the distributor, being serialized and registered to the retailer, being serialized and sold to you by number. The idea being that if you fired a bullet at somebody and it ended up inside of them, they could pull it out and they could go, hey, that's Paul Nabowski. And come back and say, well, how did this guy get shot with your bullet? Now, think about it, folks. We're one of the smallest government states in the country. They just simply wouldn't have made ammunition that was Maryland compliant. Like smart guns. There's still a law in the Maryland books right now that says that Maryland requires smart gun technology, meaning like you have to wear a ring that has a radio transmitter in it. If that ever becomes viable, you'll never be able to buy another handgun in Maryland, because no company will ever sell it to Maryland. It's not profitable. Okay? They'll sell it to law enforcement, of course. Mandatory theft reporting. So someone breaks into your house and steals your gun. If you don't report it within 24 hours of when you should have known that it was missing, not when it was missing, but when you should have known. Not when you knew, but when you should have known. So if you're gone for a week, and they say, well, you should have known 5 days ago, you go to jail. Nice.
campus weapon prohibition. Let's take a victim-rich environment and advertise it. Schools are already illegal to carry a firearm anyway under the provisions of the Gun-Free School Zone Act, but they wanted to extend this to college campuses. Towson University, anybody go to Towson? Doesn't Towson Town Boulevard go right through the campus? That's a state road. You can legally drive on it with the firearms lawfully stored. University of Maryland, Route 1 bisects the campus. That's a public road. If you go to Arundel Mills, there's a campus of Anne Arundel Community College at Arundel Mills. You come out from Bass Pro, you got your brand new trap gun, and you make a wrong turn, and you say, oh, I got to turn around, and you pull into the campus, and you get lit up for something, go to jail. Okay, so we fought that back a couple times. Ammunition laws. So they already do this illegally. The Maryland State Police strong arms retailers into doing this. And then the Firearms Safety Act. Think Chicago-style firearm or Illinois-style firearms owner identification cards. You can only buy ammunition for the gun that they have registered to you, and then they have to register the ammunition. That was a disaster. That was a Brian Frosch. He's our friend. Magazine capacity restrictions. They would have lowered the current Maryland limit down to 10 rounds from 20, even though the FBI repeatedly tells us that statistically only in 1 to 2% of all firearm shootings are more than 6 shots ever fired. So let's take 20 down to 10, but realistically no one ever fires more than 6 anyway. But it felt good. We beat that back. This was a good one. Anybody know John Leopold? Just got indicted yesterday. He's my county executive for a little while longer anyway. County Executive Leopold got a bill pushed through that said that anyone dealing in secondhand merchandise that has a serial number on it, not pawn shops, but secondhand retailers, would have to report the intake of all of their merchandise if I brought something to this person and sold it to me, to this dealer. They would have to report it to the Anne Arundel County Police Department via fax every night. Well, the word firearm never appeared in it. He got the Anne Arundel County Police to say, well, firearms have serial numbers on them, so you have to do this. And I went, no, you can't do that because it violates preemption. Make sure you remember that word, preemption. Preemption means the state of Maryland reserves the right to dictate all laws regarding firearms transactions, possession, transport in the state of Maryland. We might not like it, but it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Otherwise, you would see firearm bans in Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Baltimore City, and Howard County, the individual jurisdictions. So this means that those counties cannot pass laws that are more restrictive than the state as a whole. Remember the word preemption, because we're still fighting this. So I got the AG to rule that the Anne Arundel County ordinance was illegal. So they pulled it. Mr. Leopold then started going shopping around for sponsors in the Anne Arundel County delegation to get the law passed as enabling legislation. So if the state of Maryland says that Anne Arundel County can do this, it's okay. None of the delegation, what does this tell you? The Republican in Anne Arundel County can't even get anybody in the Republican Party to sponsor a bill for it, because they knew that this was voters. And the Democrats aren't going to help him out because... Right. He couldn't even get the District 21 people that are all Prince George's County people to support him, because there's that little chunk of Anne Arundel County that's in District 21. So he ended up in Brian Frosch's office, head of the Judicial Proceedings Committee from Bethesda, as far out anti-gun as a human being can be. Well, he took this book and passed and got it put in right now so that it would break preemption that any jurisdiction in the state could do this. Require you to have to, if you take a firearm in and try to sell it, that they're going to record that. Now, you might ask, why is that a bad thing? What if you put it on consignment? And then I decide I want to take it out of consignment. Well, now the Anne Arundel County Police Department or the Howard County Police Department, they know I have that firearm. They don't need to know that. They don't need to know that. So we're still fighting that bill. Hopefully it's going to stay tied up in committee. Right now, 2012, this is what we're working on today. Back on February 21st, we had our big gun day hearing in the House of Delegates Judicial Committee. We're dealing with 4 shall issue bills. Don't get me started on people not, you know, legislators not talking to us and submitting. 2 of the bills are identical, word for word, submitted by 2 different sponsors. They're identical. they don't talk to one another. Because there's just canned legislation out there. They go to legislative services, and legislative services goes, yeah, this is what you want. And they put their name on it. And so we have four of these bills that we're working with right now. A couple of them are better than others. Reciprocity bill says that any one of the contiguous states, anyone that has a permit in any of the contiguous states to Maryland, all of which do issue permits, would be able to carry in Maryland. Ironically, it wouldn't apply to Maryland citizens, but it's a step. The one that we're really concerned about right now is this mental health bill. This is the new front. They figured that they can't come for the guns. They figured that they're probably not going to be able to do anything with the ammunition. So what they're doing now is that in the wake of the Gifford and the Virginia Tech things, mental health is the new buzzword. And so right now they're trying to form there were two mental health bills. One of them we got voted down. The other one was to start a task force. And when they say a task force, what they mean is they're going to make all the decisions and they're going to come back and they're going to say, yep, this is what we're going to do. We don't like task force. And originally the task force, the best that we were able to do so far with this task force, only had one pro-gun representative on it out of 12 people. And guess what organization they were from? They're from the NRA. Who did I say wasn't involved in Maryland? The NRA. So what would have happened with this task force? Railroad. So we did manage to get an amendment. So the representatives of MSI and Associated Gun Clubs are going to be on this task force. So right now, out of the House of Delegates, that's what been the best we've been able to do. It still has to go over to the Senate. We're hoping we can just keep the whole thing in the Senate again this year. But this is a really bad, bad, insidious thing. Any veterans in here? Yeah, I was talking to a guy this week that just came back from Afghanistan, two tours of Afghanistan. Hey, post-traumatic stress disorder, anyone? No guns for you. And the list goes on and on and on and on. We can see what they want from this because last year they said anything that was in the DSM-4, narcolepsy, sexual dysfunction, sorry children, very, very benign, anxiety. I have a lot of anxiety just because I live in Maryland. we're all prohibited. I've got one that we're working on this week, crimes committed in other states. So if you commit a crime in Virginia, let's say, that Maryland would have prosecuted as a crime of violence, no more guns for you. The trouble is the laws don't line up. A second-degree assault, Virginia's lowest degree of assault, is basically don't do that again. You put your hand on somebody, it's a very, very low misdemeanor assault charge, and it's basically don't do that again or else. In Maryland, it goes right to second-degree assault. You're disqualified because you could serve a penalty of greater than 2 years for that. You're disqualified. So we'll see how that pans out this week. Now, legislative wins. We can imagine that this list is going to be shorter, right? It is. And as I have said, not losing is a win in itself. But here's some things. Civil immunity. Maryland has always had the common law interpretation passed on. That comes straight from the English common law. You'll never find it in the laws of most states. It's all in case law. And basically what it says is that in your home, you do not have a duty of retreat. You can defend your home. You can defend your person against someone who is intent on committing you a bodily harm or your family bodily harm. You may respond with lethal force if it's warranted. So if somebody comes to my house, it's warranted, ladies and gentlemen. Now, outside the home is a different discussion, and we can talk about that at some other time. But the problem was is that even though you may not have been prosecuted criminally, the criminal, you break into my house and I shoot you and I'm not a very good shot and I wing you, you could have sued me. Or if I was a pretty good shot and you weren't around anymore, your family could have sued. So ironically, I could have lost the very home that I was defending. So we did find, and now here, this just to show you how lopsided, how weird Maryland is. This thing passed the House of Delegates, I mean the whole House of Delegates, unanimously. Not once, not twice, but three times. It's a song, isn't it? It would go over to the Senate side, and Senator Frosch would go, nope, not even going to hear it. So we finally got that pushed through after about five or six tries. Gotcha ammunition restrictions. Maryland had an interesting thing in there because we have this regulated firearm thing, which is a handgun or any one of a series of listed evil rifles. They are 15. They had a law that said that anyone, anyone under the age of 21 could not be in possession of ammunition designed solely for use in a regulated firearm. Ammunition designed solely for use in a regulated firearm. There isn't such a thing. It doesn't exist. 22 long rifle can be used in a handgun, obviously, but it can also be used in a bolt gun, which is perfectly acceptable for an 18-year-old to have. So someone between the ages of 18 and 20 could be walking along and get stopped for something and have this ammunition on it, 9mm. Well, there's a non-regulated gun for 9mm, 45. And they could have gone to jail under the auspices of this with an overzealous prosecutor. So we saw an opportunity to put an amendment in to another bill and get this pushed away. Now, it's a minor victory, but it'll be a major victory for that 18 to 20-year-old who maybe was out plunking somewhere on his property or target shooting. Now, the biggest thing that we probably have noticed in the last few years, there is no opposition to what we're doing. We had our big day last Tuesday on the 21st. Other than the Maryland State Police, there was no one that came and spoke in opposition to anything that we were doing. No one. Not one person in the entire state of Maryland. Most anti-gun, one of the most anti-gun states in Maryland, and in this country, and not one person could be bothered to come down there and testify in favor of it. And in fact, there are no anti-gun organizations active in Maryland anymore. Not one. I do have a little video. This just to show you that we have to have some fun in the General Assembly when we can. And I hope this is loud enough.
This is a little bit late. Eric Kelly here on behalf of Ceasefire Maryland.
Hey, lobbyists.
Keep you. It's been a late night. But obviously on this bill, there historically, there have been a handful of gun dealers, of shops, where a lot of guns that end up being used in crimes are sold. This legislation is simply trying to level the playing field between the good, honest, law-abiding shops and the shops that tend to just let guns fall off the back of the truck, as we say. We think it strikes a balance. It doesn't prohibit sales. It just says that if guns are coming through your shop, you have to keep track of them. We would urge a favorable report on the bill. Thank you very much.
Okay, any questions? Yes,
Delegate Schwager. Let me preface this next little sequence here. If in Maryland you allow your corporate charter to lapse because you don't file your taxes, someone else can come in and file paperwork under that business name. If you no longer own the business name, so what happened is Ceasefire Maryland wasn't paying attention to the paperwork, and my friend John Jocelyn at the Associated Gun Clubs was poking around in the State Department of Assessment Taxation website and realized that they had forfeited their corporate name. So he drew up the papers and submitted them. So he became Ceasefire Maryland. Think about that for a second.
So any of you that are business owners, make sure you remember that. So this guy on the right here that was just talking was the paid. He's a paid lobbyist. He's an attorney of some sort. And so Ceasefire Maryland, who couldn't be bothered to come testify on their own behalf. Ironically, the lady who's the ostensible head of Ceasefire Maryland is also a music teacher in my county. I know who she is. I don't think she knows who I am. Interesting. So Delic Sneagel is about, I slipped him a note. I always try to sit nearby. And so we found out this guy was going to testify at Ceasefire Maryland. So we got to have some fun.
Organization you from, sir?
Ceasefire Maryland.
Are you with John Jocelyn?
I'm sorry.
He with
yeah. For the rest of the committee's record, there is a dispute over the name that has to do with the license through the state and all of that stuff. I will say I'm here representing the board members of the organization formally and for a long time known as
Ceasefire Maryland. Okay, so you're not with Ceasefire Maryland.
No,
the organization that is registered with the state of Maryland, Ceasefire Maryland, you're not with them, are you?
You know,
is there a registered with the state of Maryland an organization, Ceasefire Maryland?
The C3, no, but that doesn't mean there can't be an organization called. We're trading on legal issues here. But the fact of the matter is, there could still be an organization called Ceasefire Maryland. You're talking about a particular.
If I go and sue Ceasefire Maryland tomorrow, you want to show up in court?
I would invite you to go ahead and do that.
I'm just, well, then, because you wouldn't show up in court, right?
Right.
The real Ceasefire Maryland would.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Please come in with a real legal name if you're going to appear before us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So these hearings are excruciating. I mean, for instance, last Tuesday we sat there from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until about 9:05 in the evening doing testimony. So the best thing that you can hope for is in the course of these days to have some fun. And sometimes, you know, it is a little bit of theater, and we try to throw some more things out there. Moving on to this next thing of outreach. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to move outside of the community that we already represent. You're not going to see us at gun shows. That's where the gun owners are.
Right. They know.
Well, they're dangerous people, of course. We need to go to the community at large, and we've got to stop preaching to the choir. Bob and I were talking before that the message that we have to get out, folks, is it's not about the guns. I don't care if you own any guns. I don't care. We have to realize it's about rights. We have the right to make a choice. Right? Libertarians, right? Choice. We have a right to make a choice about whether we want to own a firearm, whether we want to carry a firearm, whether we need to decide whether we want to use a firearm. And we hope that we never have to do that. But it is about rights. And, of course, we know that most of the laws that were passed were in response to the 1968 riots, right? In Maryland, it was legal until 1972 to carry a firearm, carry a handgun on your hip, just like the Old West, until 1972. Concealed carry has been prohibited a lot longer without a permit, but we're trying to move. We've done some gun shows. It's okay. The frustrating thing about the gun shows is you'll be sitting there, and you'll get one of two things that will happen. Oh, boy, I'm in Virginia. Who's horse in the library? You're working the table. I'm taking my Saturday afternoon off to try to educate the community, to try to get people to come to the cause. And the last thing you want to see as an advocate, as an issue advocate, is somebody to go up and go, I've already got my Maryland permit. You'll never get one. In other words, I got mine. I'm not going to do anything to help you get yours. Or the other one that's really good is, you know you're wasting your time. You know you're wasting your time.
We're used to that.
Oh, well. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah. Don Quixote is my middle name. But these are the very people that you're out there working directly for. It's a pretty straightforward issue, isn't it? And you're at a gun show. Ironically, we get a much better reception at the Chantilly gun show. The Virginians are over there going, please fix it. Please. That 6 miles going up I-81 is killing me. They go from Virginia to West Virginia and back. Please fix it. Because, you know, law-abiding gun owners, they're stopping and they're putting their firearm in the trunk, and so they say. Where we've had some really good success, Towson Spring Festival, Towson Fest, amazing. 40-some thousand people walking past your booth every day. Or over the course of the weekend. And the best story, you get the stories, you get the ones that are like, oh, my gun initiative, great. Wait, more guns? And, you know, it's like Ebola plague flying about, and they can't wait to get it right. But the best story was they're all smaller than me, but I'm speaking up. Two elderly African-American ladies come up, and they've got the church hats on, and you know the picture, right? And I thought, oh boy, here it comes. Now, I work in Prince George's County, you know, but I'm still thinking, here it comes. All right, I'll give it my best shot. So I launch in my spiel, ladies, how are you doing? Is there questions I can answer? And she goes, well, tell me a little bit about what you're doing. And I told her kind of thing. She goes, well, I never leave home without my .25 caliber pistol. And I always tell people, please don't tell these amazing people who volunteer. Don't tell me anything I might have to report under subpoena. People tell me this. I never go into Baltimore without my gun. Don't tell me that. Please. But they do. Prince George's County Fair, surprisingly, a very, very good experience. Open holster rallies. This has been something that we had ours. We've had two of them on the Martin Luther King Day holiday right in downtown Annapolis, right in front of the General Assembly buildings. We've done them in Annapolis. The idea being here that everyone takes their holster and they put it on and walks around town and has lunch. We have brochures and literature to illustrate the fact that unlike 43, 44 other states in the country, our holsters have to be empty. But in this, people don't you know, with cell phones and everything else and iPods. So we started getting all these old police holsters and spray painting them blue, like bright blue. Even that wasn't enough. So then we got some shirts made.
I hope I have a picture on here. No, I didn't. We got some of the blue shirts there on there. It's hard to see them.
Ask me about my empty holster. Arrow. So we... And you may know Larry Pratt from Donors America. He came in as one of our speakers. So that's been something we've been working with. Now, some of this new stuff, and I know that this will grate on the purely states' rights advocates, but that horse has left the barn a long, long, long time ago. The real fight that we think is going to be the most productive front for us right now is going to be on the federal level. Right now, we've got a couple of lawsuits that have been matriculating their way through the intricacies of the federal court system, and there's some legislative. We've done some amicus briefs. We've been working with Gun Owners of America. We've been working with the Second Amendment Foundation. Some of you may remember that we gave a fairly substantial donation to the Second Amendment Foundation, not this past August, but the year before, in support of the Woolard case, which I'll get to in a second. This was a sort of a promising case, and it subsequently has been denied. This Machindaro fella was in a national park before they passed the national park rules and changed things there where it was legal to carry. And this would have essentially been Heller for outside of the home. Some of you probably know that the Heller decision, it was momentous. I mean, I'm not going to try to take away from it. It was a big deal. Said in the District of Columbia, it is lawful to have a firearm for the purposes of self-defense in your home, and it's allowed to be operational. You can't prohibit that. Washington, D.C. is great. Inside the home. It did nothing for outside the home. And this would have been a significant case because they were trying to address that issue. The trouble was is it just wasn't put together as well as it probably should have been. You know, bad court cases do about as much damage as maybe can do more damage than no court case at all. Mm-hmm. The case that right here has the most direct effect on Maryland is this Woolard v. Sheridan. I think they've now changed it to Woolard v. Maryland State Police because Mr. Sheridan is no longer the superintendent of the state police. This deals directly with the right to keep and bear arms and the equitability of the permitting process. A little bit of backstory. Mr. Woolard was issued one of the 783 permits out of the 42,000 permits in the state of Maryland for purposes of self-defense. That's 1.8%. 1.8% of all permits in the state of Maryland are issued solely for the purposes of self-defense. It's outrageous. I mean, well, in the state of Maryland, typically they're issued for business owners, legislators, which I'll illustrate in a second, retired law enforcement, judiciary, or if you add up all of the law enforcement, retired law enforcement, correctional officers, retired correctional officers, and officers of the court, they account for 33% of all the permits issued in the state. The majority of the rest are issued towards business owners, if you can justify it as part of the business. And security guards. But Mr. Woolard had a permit for self-defense because he had been threatened by an individual, and he had the requisite documented three threats or whatever they arbitrarily decide that week it needs to be. But they gave him the permit. Bad guy goes to jail. Permit expires. Bad guy gets out of jail, moves in 2 miles away from his house. The situation hasn't changed. The threat is the same. He applies for another permit and is denied. The application was verbatim identical, and they denied it. So this is going to probably be the one that goes to the Supreme Court, eventually, we hope. And this is the one that we financially have been supporting. And the issue here in the state of Maryland, you need to also remember, I told you to remember the words of preemption. The other words that you need to remember are good and substantial. That's the part of the permitting process that allows the state police to unilaterally decide whether you get the permit or not. If you may feel that you have a good and substantial reason for issuing a permit, you can get it. Carrying the cash deposits for your business. Somehow being retired law enforcement automatically seems to be good and substantial. If you're a certain politician, which I'll get to in a second, you can get the permit. But purposes of self-defense,
Very rarely. You have to have documented threats or have survived attacks. Think about the jerky of that.
He didn't kill me yet. Maybe he won't get to me the next time. And I have a gun for this. And they may or may not. Likelihood, they will deny. So, the other thing that's kind of going through the federal system right now, and this is the part where the Tenth Amendment folks are going to have a kitten. National reciprocity, where the federal government would say that if you have to issue people, you have to recognize permits from anyone else who has a permit in their other state. So if you have a Virginia resident permit, Maryland would have to recognize it. If you have a Michigan resident permit, Maryland would have to recognize it. Ironically, again, Maryland residents would not be able to carry because we don't have permits. And ironically, it would not help Maryland residents in other states. But this does give us an equal protection argument. Doesn't. If the other 43 states that issue permits regularly would allow people to carry in the state of Maryland, and we're not, we could. Now, the potentially problematic thing of this is, anybody else have, well, I won't ask. I have a Virginia non-resident permit. Well, I've been carrying, I think, 31 states this year. They changed it to all. All I know is that I've been carrying Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, while I am most of the time, not Maryland. It could mean the end of non-resident permits, because the idea of non-resident permits are that Virginia says, well, hey, if you can pass our background check, we got no problem with carrying a firearm in Virginia. But if there's this reciprocity thing where it's automatic, they might say, well, we don't need to do reciprocity. Now, places like Utah and Florida probably will continue because it's big money for them. Big money. Did you know Maryland is the single largest issuer of Utah permits in the country, I think? The single largest state issuer of Utah permits. I think it's because we're all just going, I just want a permit. Give me, I'll take the class, I'll pay the $65. I just want a permit because I can't get one in Maryland. So we think there's probably some potentially downside to that. Here's Maryland. We're yellow in so many ways. Dark green represents the states where you do not need a permit in any manner to carry a firearm about your person. Wyoming, Arizona, Alaska, and Vermont. I was in Vermont last year in Burlington. Wonderful, wonderful place. So, as a citizen of the United States, you can go into those states and carry a firearm openly or concealed about your person with no permit whatsoever. And I think that I heard Pennsylvania is probably going to be the next one. The medium green represents places that are traditional shall issue states, meaning that if you pass the background checks, whatever the state's requirements are, they're going to give you a permit. If you're not a bad guy, here's your permit. Alabama is funny. They'll give you a permit, but the sheriff gets to kind of decide. But for all intents and purposes, it is shall issue. Again, just to show you the absurdity, California is better than Maryland in this regard. It's not a better place to be a gun owner. It's a better place to get a permit. Massachusetts is better than Maryland. We didn't have the county-by-county data, but I will tell you, New York is better than Maryland if you live in the right county. But you see this? You want to live in L.A., San Diego? I don't live there anyway. Oakland, San Francisco, you're not going to get a permit. Remember those words, that word preemption? This is what preemption does. This is where lack of preemption is. Okay? States that are red, forget it. Hawaii, Illinois, New Jersey. Illinois has no provisions whatsoever for the issuance of a permit. It's not there. There is no process. New Jersey does, but it doesn't happen. And for those that say, well, it'll never happen in Maryland, what just happened in Wisconsin? They just went shall issue this year. They went from no issue. They were red. They were worse than Maryland and became better than Maryland. And arguably a very, very anti-gun, but they've got the rural areas just like Maryland does. And they have gone shall issue this year. 37,000 people filed their permit applications within the first 3 weeks, I think. 37,000, I think, was the numbers. All the states around us, if you have a Florida permit, you can carry in all the states around us. Or a Virginia permit, or I don't know about Utah and Delaware. I don't go to Delaware that often. So
we're pretty much an island, and this is the illustration that we try to give to people, is that, you know, we only know what we know, and Maryland is very much unlike over 80% of the rest of the country. Now, to go back to... Anybody know who this guy is? Don't read it.
Conaway.
Yes. Yes. And Mr. Conaway became well known over the last several months for, ironically, drawing a firearm from Adam Meister, the blogger. Now, anybody been around long enough to know what Frank Conaway's cause was when he was in the House of Delegates? Gun control! During the Mandel administration, and Mr. Mandel admits that he carried a firearm. There's no record of him ever having a permit. Governor Mandel never had a permit. But he admitted in the newspaper that he carried a permit, carried a firearm. One of these days I'll get around to getting in jail for the conference. Conaway made this his cause. Here's something that most people in the state of Maryland will never see. An approved handgun permit application. His name's on here somewhere, right there. His son's currently in the General Assembly. I dumped this on the committee last week. His son's on the committee where I dumped this whole packet. He was a little tense. He filed for a permit for the purposes of self-defense because somebody broke into his house. You can't shoot somebody just because they break into your house when you're not there. He wasn't even home. And the Maryland State Police, I will give Corporal Cusimano, who's kind of the guy, I will give him credit. From the Maryland State Police, he went, not only no, heck no, you don't have a good and substantial reason. We don't have to like that, but at least they were being equitable. I'll take that. Well, he files an appeal to the Handgun Permit Review Board, which is an appointed board of four or five people, political appointees, I might add. And who appoints them? The governor. So he files an appeal with the Handgun Permit Review Board, and they subsequently approve it. And I have the entire application process and the appeal documents, and it is blatantly clear that nowhere in those documents does he demonstrate a good substantial reason by even the loosest of interpretations. So I took and I highlighted all 30 copies of every word that I wanted them to see, and we went through the whole packet together in testimony in front of the General Assembly, in front of the Judicial Committee. Well, Conway Jr. sat over there and tried to figure out how to get to Annapolis and do something bad to me, because they have a reputation of going after them. And ironically, that the thing that Meister was going after this guy for is he doesn't even live in Baltimore City where his job is. But the point here also is this was essentially an unrestricted permit. It says, on or off duty as an employee of the clerk of the court of Baltimore City. On or off duty. That means as long as he has the job, he can carry the firearm. There are virtually no unrestricted permits in the state of Maryland. Usually it's while you're carrying deposits, or as an attorney, or as a physician, or whatever it may be. Exactly right. He got an unrestricted permit. There was four people on the board at that time. It was a 2-1-1 vote. One person abstained because he had some integrity and said he knew Mr. Conaway. The person that voted against it was one of our guys, so I'm going to presume he voted against it. The other two people were political appointees from the O'Malley administration. So this guy got an unrestricted permit solely because he was with the in crowd. That's not the way rights are supposed to work. And this is the very thing that we're going to be going after. I'm working on a little bit of an expose for the next week or so that is going to put this out in the press and see what kind of mileage we can get out of it. It may sink, it may swim, I don't know. But here's some resources, some things that you may want to take a look at. Handgunlaw.us is the definitive thing. If you're traveling across the country and want to know what the laws are, that's the place to go. MarylandShooters.com is one of those discussion forum. Lots of gunnies on there. And, of course, the General Assembly website is there. So, I'll take questions because I'm trying to stay on time. Yes, ma'am.
I would wonder if you would comment on where the role of there's this group in Johns Hopkins University that's looking at treating violence, particularly gun violence, you know, injury or death by that means, as a kind of an epidemic, or epidemiologically. And I read some of their writings early on, and it didn't look as if it was a threat, but somehow, my God, I knew it was. I know there's one guy with an Italian name that they're working through who's definitely anti-gun. How do they fit through this whole picture?
Follow the money. Follow the money. Daniel Webster is the guy that you're talking about. Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Funded by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, the Open Society Institute, which is George Soros. Follow the money. I mean, that's all you need to know. It is an anti-gun agenda that they're trying to make their conclusions fit their agenda. And when the guy comes and he testifies at the General Assembly and we start picking apart his facts, he folds like a deck of cards because he's got nowhere to run with it. So, yes, it is a threat if he gains traction with it, but the reality is even in Maryland we've been successful at beating it back. Yes, sir.
If I remember correctly, every mail from 18 to 55 parts listed. The governor calls you up, you have responsibility, you up. You're on firearm, you're on ammunition, you're on uniform. If the governor were to do that, I mean, how are, and I understand every mail from this, but if you need prosecuted,
it doesn't exist in Maryland. There is no such thing as a militia in the state of Maryland.
The governor can't call it Maryland.
No. There's the Maryland Defense Force, which is the ostensible unorganized militia, even though they're pretty organized. And then, of course, they would interpret the Maryland National Guard as being an organized militia. But there's actually language in the Maryland law, and I can't quote the chapter and verse, that prohibits militias explicitly. Interesting. Because you've got to remember that in the state of Maryland, the Constitution of the state of Maryland has no provisions for the right to keep and bear arms whatsoever. I think we're one of four or five states where it was never put into the initial writing of the Maryland state Constitution. Yes, sir?
Yeah, about a month ago, I went down to the Maryland Small Arms Range on Sunday to shoot. It was like an hour and a half wait to get in there. It was like wait 3 beers or something.
Yeah.
And then last week, I went out to Atlantic Guns to buy a gun, and it was packed. People were buying a gun. I just wonder, you know, obviously a lot of people purchasing weapons. The Maryland registration, is that accessible to FOIA? And can you use that to drum up membership? I mean, obviously a person who buys a gun is motivated for some reason. And if you can figure out what it is.
Maryland in some ways is better than other states in that you can't make bulk requests. So, for instance, when I got Conaway's permit, the thing, that was the result of a PIA request.
That's a permit. I'm not talking about
that. Yeah, but I'm going to come back to that. That Maryland says you have to request by name. So in other words, I put in a Public Information Act request for the members of the House Judiciary Committee, Mike Smigel, Don Dwyer, I went right down the list, and I put them, I want all documents pertaining to handgun permit applications for these people. And the only reason his name came back was because his son's on the committee. They came back, they weren't paying attention. So what I'm saying is that unless I knew somebody had bought a firearm already, I couldn't go into the Maryland State Police and say, I want a Public Information Act request of all the people that have bought guns in the last couple months.
So if you name the people, you can do that.
Theoretically, but they could also say, well, this is an investigative document, which is shielded. So if something is an investigative document, it's not open to the Public Information Act.
What about gun store registers? Do they keep track of that?
Well, they're prohibited by the Firearms Owners Protection Act of releasing that information. So, in other words, a firearms dealer can't say, Bill Smith bought these firearms and give me that information. That's a violation of the law. Yes, sir.
I think you made a very important point when you said that this is about rights and not guns. For a long time, I've become upset when people, even pro-Second Amendment people, start talking about, it's about my keeping my guns. I always say to myself, this is not about the gun. It's about your right to defend yourself. In the Middle Ages, we'd be talking about spears and crossbows, not 357 Magnums. So I think it's a very important point. I hope people take it to heart when they talk to other people about it. I really, really do.
It really is at the heart of our message. We really don't talk about the gory business end of things. We talk about the right to make a decision.
Yeah.
And to make a choice. Yes, sir.
Honorary self-defense, it's sort of something that's combined and looks at the laws in Maryland. It can be just as...
The duty to retreat outside the home, is a big pile of case law. Red Cross is one of the cases. And basically what it says is that you do have a right to defend yourself if no other avenues of escape are apparent.
Yeah.
And if you feel that your life or the life of someone else is in imminent threat, or...
I think sexual assault, the risk of sexual assault that's in there. So in other words, you have got a duty to back up if you are safely able to with regards to anything. The assault laws in Maryland are very, very strict. I mean, they truthfully are. They are very restrictive. Yes, Bob?
Is there a certain threshold that it will be possible one day to get a pro-gun bill through, past Brian Frosch or Michael Bush, or whomever goes to the House?
Only if they see the handwriting on the wall from the federal standpoint. This is why I think we're getting more traction in the House committee. We've got people from Prince George's County that are starting to vote with us. I mean, really, think about that for a second. And I think that people are starting to see the handwriting on the wall, that the circle was closing. I mean, you know, we are the Alabama, if we want to talk about civil rights. We're Alabama and Mississippi as the rest of the country circles around it with civil rights. We're just in a different circle. And they're starting to feel the pressure. Gansler's not doing a good job with the Ward case, much to our pleasure. He's going to lose. He's going to lose. We feel very strongly about that. So, Frosch is an immovable object. He truthfully is. He's an ideologue and an arrogant one at that. I have no love for the man.
I'd like to speak to you afterwards with possible speaking engagement. But could you, have you been following HB 45 and can you update us on the status?
Well, all four of those bills, there's HB 45, 430, 488, 1135, and they all attack different aspects of the good and substantial clause. And for our purposes, they really are all the same, even though that there are things that we can discuss. The reality is it's probably going to die in committee. The truth is that probably Valerio is going to keep it in the drawer because he knows that if it goes across the street, it's dead for sure. Now, we can get upset at Senator or Delegate Valerio. He's doing his job. And I don't like it. And he may still let it out for a vote. We're pushing him. And I got to love a guy that on a Friday night, the man's, 74 years old. He's been in the General Assembly since 1973. And on Friday night at 7:30, he's picking up his own phone in his office. We don't have to like everything the guy does, but he's working. I will respect him for that. And he actually runs a pretty good hearing. He may allow a hearing, a vote on it. He has done it in the past. I suspect that he won't. But if it goes across the street, it's going to die in the Senate committee. So the best we can hope for is that we might get a vote, and I put out a blast this week asking people to call the office and ask him to let it have a chance. At least we can get people on record. I want to see Tiffany Austin from Prince George's County. I want to see where she puts her vote. I want to see where Jill Carter puts her vote. I want to see where Kurt Anderson, who I think has a permit, I want to see where he puts his vote. I really want to see where Frank Connolly Jr. puts his vote. I really want to see where he puts his vote. So, I could tell you that all those bills are going to sail through, and by October 1st, we've all got our permits, and we're carrying our firearm. I'd be lying to you if I thought that was really going to happen. Yes, sir.
First of all, thanks for speaking to us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Excellent. And I'm glad you have a member of the organization before midnight tonight.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about the relationship that Maryland Shell Issue has had with Maryland law enforcement. I have an inkling of what the relationship was, what MSP, Maryland State Police's attitude. I live in Montgomery County, where we have an increasingly militarized county police. Are they members? Do they share anything with you? Or are they
a lot of law enforcement? Have a lot of law enforcement people who are members. In fact, there's a bill right now, HB 300, which would have said that they were going to change the 3-year renewal process that we all have to go through for permits to, if you're a retired law enforcement, it would be for 5 years. Well, retired law enforcement almost automatically gets issued permits anyway, and they can also carry under the Federal Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, which means that if they still have the credentials, they can carry the firearm legally anywhere in the country. And so there's a member of the committee who is former law enforcement who is very beholden to that community. And so he put this bill in that said law enforcement would be able to get their permits renewed every 5 years. And I said, well, what does this do? They already get their permits anyway. Why should they not have to do it every 3 years like the rest of us? I'm going to pay my $140 and get denied. They're going to pay their $140 and get approved. And so we actually had law enforcement officers who stood up with us in that bill and testified that I am in opposition to this bill because until every citizen in the state of Maryland that has a permit already
can renew every 5 years. I don't think law enforcement should be given another special privilege. I have federal law enforcement. I have Anne Arundel County Police, Montgomery County Police, in fact. So most line officers, most of the guys that you see out there in the cars are gun guys.
Yeah.
I'll venture to say 90% of them are going to be okay with our mission. The Maryland State Police is a political, is a direct outreach of the governor's office. The superintendent of the state police is a political appointee directly by the governor, and everybody answers to him. Okay? So if we go back and we look at the Ehrlich administration, you know, Governor Ehrlich promised that if we voted him in, we just voted him in, he'll direct the superintendent of the state police to start issuing permits as self-defense being a good and substantial reason. Imagine that, a politician that didn't tell us the truth. He lied.
Yeah.
And then the excuse was, well, I couldn't do it in my first term.
Yeah.
So you need to elect me again. So I will, in answer to your question, I'm going to say that law enforcement, for probably 90% of law enforcement, the higher-ups, the chiefs, they're the ones that come in. And I feel bad for those officers, the corporals, that have to come in their uniforms with their gun on their hip, ironically, I might add, and have to testify against their bill. And you can tell they're sitting there going, I'm here to testify in opposition to this bill. Sometimes. We had a Maryland State Trooper come 1 year in his uniform and testify that assault, this is back in the days of assault weapon ban bills, assault weapons do not represent the right of the Maryland State Police. We have no opposition. We are here in opposition to this assault weapon ban bill. That was during the Ehrlich administration. Fast forward to the O'Malley administration, the exact same trooper came back wearing a suit the very next year and testified in favor because assault weapons were an imminent threat to the Maryland State Police. It's the same guy, 12 months later. Yes, sir.
So what's the status in Maryland? If someone breaks into your home, do you have to see a gun before you kill them, or what?
You have to believe that your life is in jeopardy. You have to respond with life force. So in other words, I'm sure I saw a weapon. Sure I saw a weapon. He made a quick movement. I'm not in his home.
All right, let's give a big hand to Paul.